All right, welcome to the Matt Carney episode. You good, buddy?
I'm good.
That's the same hat you had on, or do you always just wear the Portland hats?
It's just my, I just get lazy.
So probably the same hat?
Yeah.
I have, if you walk down to my room, I mean, I have 40% of my wardrobe's Arkansas stuff because I can wear it all the time. I'm representing home.
Right.
Are you still a diehard home guy?
Yes. Oregon, yes. Yeah. I still claim it. Somehow I've been in Nashville for like 18, I don't even know how many years now. But yeah, Oregon is still, it gets in you. I'm sixth generation Oregonian. So my family came over on the like covered wagon, Oregon Trail, the game you played in high school, middle school. That was, yeah, my family.
Probably high school for me. I didn't go to a very good high school. Yeah. We just got it like 11th grade. Yeah. Was that when Oregon Trail comes out? Because I played that game.
Yeah.
I'm 38, so.
Joey dies of dysentery.
Yeah.
Do you fort the river?
The oxen, how many oxen can you shoot?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So if you're in Oregon during Oregon Trail, is there a sort of, you're proud of that?
I guess I didn't have a context. I didn't know people in like Wyoming were playing this game. I thought maybe they had like Wyoming Trail or something, yeah.
Did you have Oregon Trail, Mike D?
Yeah.
Okay, because that was, we would go to the computer lab. And it was a big deal because this is
typing class.
This is the only C I ever made all through school was typing. Yeah. I was straight A's. You know, I was the kid probably too smart for my own good. It got me in trouble. But I go and it was a B. The only B I made in high school was in typing. Otherwise, I'd have been a straight up 4-point student.
How do you get a B in what you just didn't
I
have just, the speed?
You were
playing Oregon Trail too much.
I think I was just goofing around too much. It was typing. Who cares?
Yeah, right.
And then in college, I made a C because I made a C in French. I minored in
French.
Oh, you're
smart.
No. But I took French because we had to take a foreign language to be. I studied, I wrote in college and I did radio television. And so I took French and I made a C. And I was pretty disappointed. I went to my teacher and said, hey, I'm never going to use this, dude. I'm not even sure I deserve a C. I said, I'm never going to use this. Please. I haven't begged for much of my life.
Yep.
I said, please give me a C. What do you want from me? You mean, French fries, French dip? What do you want? I'll do whatever. I'll make one for the class. I was trying. And I didn't know what I was going to have. And finally, they sent my report, and it was a C. And I thought, oh, my God, he listened. Because I don't know that I deserved it.
Really?
What kind of student were you?
Very bad.
Really?
I failed ping pong class once.
But that's an effort thing.
Yeah, that was really just I didn't want to put on gym clothes to play ping pong. And I would get marked down every day.
Oh, dress up in gym clothes?
Yeah, you had to like get in your like PE clothes. And I just was like, nah, man. But then like after 3/4 of the semester not doing it one time, it was like a hole I couldn't get out of. I was starting to do the math. I'm like, even if I dress up every day, he's like, nope.
But that hurt your final grade point average.
Probably, ping pong
hurt your final
grade.
Well,
my final GPA was really low. So, I mean, not really low. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I was not a good student, no. I mean, I wouldn't say that I thought I was dumb, but I just, high school was interesting for me. I probably snuck out of my house like 4 nights a week. Just, I was super rebellious.
To do what?
I don't know. What do you do in Eugene, Oregon? Probably try to score like alcohol or something, or I don't know. I was just restless. I just liked, it was like this thing we would do, me and this group of friends, and we would just roam around town. And I get grounded, but if you just leave, I realized that if you get grounded, you could still just leave.
There's nothing they could really do.
Unless they like chain me to the bed.
It's like your baby now. We were just talking briefly out there. You're like 16 months old. I can't even, you can't even communicate with her.
No. If I get what I gave that, it's bad. I was my poor parents.
See, I would think you're such a cerebral guy just by being a fan of your music and the different styles you kind of bounce within.
Yeah.
That it was probably, school was probably too easy for someone like you.
I would say it just didn't fit. Like sitting in I'm really ADD, like tested off the charts and, when I went and took some big formal test, not just like I'm ADD, everybody says they're ADD, so for me, sitting in a desk facing someone talking to you, sitting still, like just didn't work. I just didn't vibe that way.
Did you take ACT or SATs?
SATs.
See, I'm from Arkansas. I took ACTs. Did you not do well? Or did you kill it?
I did pretty good. Yeah. I was like 1200 or 11 something, which I fell asleep during the writing session because I'd stayed out the night before.
You just didn't care?
I just didn't care. I mean, I guess I cared, but no, my brother was really smart. I was like into art and I was a soccer player. And so school just didn't, I didn't see how that fit into what, I don't know, it just didn't move me at all.
You would be the guy that I would be jealous of all through high school and college, because not only were you the guy that was cool and you snuck off and did you party and it made you bad grades. But then you're obviously musically talented, gifted, but you're an athlete. Like, you were a really good soccer player. You went to they paid you basically to play soccer in college. What a scholarship
well,
is.
Well, that's kind of been blown out of proportion because Chico State at the time didn't have really a full scholarship thing, so they would help you with other things, but it wasn't like a full ride.
But they
partly because of my grades. Like, I just really, I played soccer at Chico. I was okay.
Is that Aaron Rodgers, Chico?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you guys have any relationship at all?
We are Twitter friends.
Okay. That's something.
Yeah, we're Twitter friends.
Do you ever have anybody follow you on Twitter and then you worry for a bit? Like, oh, if I post something real stupid, right when they start following me, they're going to unfollow me? Do you ever have that?
Because
I do.
I just know because I'm terrible at it anyway. So.
Yeah, you don't tweet much.
I don't, no. I should tweet more.
I had the, you ever watch Full House?
Oh, yeah.
A kid? Okay, so I did a show with
But Kim. I didn't grow up, my wife was really, like, we talked about this last night. That's funny you brought it up. We were talking about Full House.
Well, what was that conversation?
It was remember that, and I was like, I wasn't really into it. And she's like, well, I thought,
party and doing fun stuff. Yeah.
I just didn't get it. I was like, it was, I think, yeah, I don't know.
I did a show on Fox with Candace Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did the show together.
She's wine. She makes wine.
Does she make wine?
I just knew that. I don't know how I know that.
Yeah, I don't know that. So I don't drink wine, so I don't know. But we did the show, and I thought it was cool because I watched Full House my whole life.
Yep.
And then she started following me on Twitter and Instagram.
Whoa, yeah.
So I thought at every single move that I had for like a week, I thought about everything I was writing.
Yeah,
it had to go through the Candace Cameron test. Like, would Candace approve?
Yeah.
And so then I would check the likes if she liked my picture. I'm down a terrible wormhole with her.
Yeah.
And she's married, got like four kids or something. But yeah, she was someone like I grew up. But I wonder if Aaron Rodgers starts to follow you if you go, man, I shouldn't tweet anything stupid for a minute.
That's not really my brand to tweet stupid stuff.
You ever DM him? Be like, what up?
No, that's where we text each other in Twitter world. He's like, when are you coming to play a show? I'm like, yo. So mentioned, like, I guess he started a record label or something. So I found out because he mentioned my music a couple of times. I was like, wait, what? Aaron Rodgers. He knows who I am. So
that's gotta be cool, right?
Yeah.
Somebody that you think's cool thinks you're cool.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool.
In that realm of the world, who's been the coolest person where you're like, wow, they actually think I'm cool?
I went to my first record. I went into my publisher, and there was this poster on the wall of this band called the Boxcar. Oh, shoot. I forget their name. Anthem something. Box. Gaslight Anthem. That was their name. No, Boxcar. It was Gas. And I was like, oh, man, I love those guys. Obviously, I love them so much. I know their name really well. But but I was like, man, we did something for this Bruce compilation. And he goes, oh, that's funny. They were just in here. And they pointed at your picture and said, oh, we love Matt Carney. And the guy goes, oh, how do you know Matt Carney? And they go, oh, Bruce gave us his record. And I was like, Bruce? He's like, yeah, Springsteen. And I was like, wait, Bruce knows I'm alive and gave my record to somebody? Yeah. But I guess he's like really into... keeps up with current music, and we were both on Columbia, and I'd done something for his like charity CD, so there was a way he could have known me. But yeah, I literally didn't talk for like 2 hours.
Did you ever talk to Bruce Springsteen?
I have not, no.
But he knows you're alive. That's pretty cool.
He knows I'm alive.
I have a friend that went and saw his play, the Broadway show.
Yeah.
I guess play maybe isn't accurate. The musical where he walks you through his life while playing his songs. And so I got online to see what tickets were to the Bruce Springsteen show. I believe it's called Springsteen or Bruce or Bruce Springsteen, something probably like that. And they're like $1,300 to go watch that show.
Wow.
Because, I mean, they're only
he's got it figured out then.
Yeah, and I was reading the story.
Just get like 10 people to pay $1 million and you're good.
Then you do it, once a night. But he is staying off the road because he goes and does a show 3 or 4 nights a week, does a couple shows.
Oh, wow.
And makes the money, feels creatively fulfilled. And isn't that what it's all about? Like, for me, that's what I try to find. How do I stay creatively fulfilled? Because I just don't want to go through the motions and get out. I never got into radio for the music. Loving the music is a bonus part of it. I got into the radio to creatively, and right, same way that I got into TV and stand-up, is to creatively, like, fill my cup full. And the fact that I'm a music fan allows me to break artists or bring artists like yourself on when you're not a country artist, but my show goes, I don't really care what you are. Just if you're good or I like you, come on in. So for me, that's it. That's what I'm always striving to do. Like, how is it for you? Are you always writing music? Are you trying to
And to what you said, you can feel that when I've been listening to your podcasts and what you do. And yeah, you're not just playing music. I would say you're an artist. You know, you're doing your thing, which makes sense that you would get into all the different stuff you're doing. Can I say that?
Yeah. I don't think I get into anything.
Can I interview you?
Yeah. I try to avoid that. When it starts to happen, I slowly pivot out of it and come out. So how do you keep yourself creatively motivated?
I love writing and I just love songwriting. I didn't actually start songwriting till I was a junior in college. And it just was this like puzzle that was fit everything that I loved and what like my gift. I just was like, oh, this is, I get it. It's like it was moving in slow motion, songwriting. I was like, you put this here and that there. And so I think I still, that challenge of writing songs and creating music and emotional moments are just, you know, I still love it, you know, and I get out of bed every day with like song ideas and lyrics. I just put out a record and I'm still like, I was up late at night, like writing down lyrics because it's just what I do.
You write them on a pad or you put them on your phone?
Phone.
When was that shift for you?
February 12th, 2007.
And you remember the day?
Yeah.
You're not messing with me?
I'm messing with you.
Okay. I don't know. Listen, I can already tell you're working on a different level than I am. So, but for a lot of my friends, they'll stick to the pad because it's what they feel the most comfortable.
I'm a terrible speller. I can't. I'm literally like, I'm also like dyslexic partly. And spelling is super hard for me. I was an English major. And I could not have gotten through college without spell check.
So you're an English major, an athlete, a musician. Did you graduate college or did you get out?
I didn't. I left my you would think they would because at Chico State they keep sending me like envelopes to donate to the school and like come. But no, I didn't mean to. Yeah, it was like a road trip to Nashville with a buddy of mine and somehow I dropped out. Supposed to be for a month and now it's been years.
You know how many hours short you are?
I'm about a year.
Any interest at all in finishing
totally. It? Totally. I think about it all the time. I would love to go to school now. That sounds so fun to me.
Like learning is now cool to you.
Yes. Like, man, people should wait, I think. And like,
wait till 30 or so and then go back at it. I wonder, and again, you have a kid.
Yeah.
Meaning at some point they're going to look at your past actions to base their own. Does that factor into being a dad now? Like in the decisions that you make? Not until right now. He's like, oh, crap.
Wow. I mean, totally, yeah. I mean, I think that maybe not as much. She's 16 months. It's very, like, in the immediate, like, am I on my phone when she wants me to read her a book? Like that. But I guess that'll, like,
it's all on the internet. Play out. Your whole life's on the internet.
I know.
Our parents' lives weren't on the internet. We don't know what they did.
I know.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
Your daughter's going to know every move you made.
I know. I think about that maybe more like when I'm writing songs and like, I don't know why this is so weird. This is a new thing, but like I'm picturing this like teenage girl being like, that song was no good or something like I'm like haunted by my 13-year-old daughter if she's going to think it's get into what I do or not.
I was listening to your record, which I have a lot. I really enjoyed the new record, by the way.
Thank you.
Like no BS. It's kind of what made me go, hey, I really enjoy the new record. I've been a fan for years. And I thought, let me be selfish. I like the new record. He lives in town. Let me just reach out. I think it was Jake. I think I was talking about your record on the air. I'm going back through my head. I was talking about your record on the air. Jake Owen reaches out and goes, hey, I'm kind of friends with him. I was just with him.
We're friends.
Okay.
We can establish that, Jake.
And he said, I was just with him.
I hit the ball farther than him on the golf course, too.
Oh, you're a golfer? You're an athlete, huh?
I mean, yeah, golf's my one kind of like
really
dabble in athletics
still
yeah
but can you play with him
Yeah, man.
Are you better than him?
No.
Okay, because he's
real good.
He's really good, yeah.
Yeah. I don't play that much.
For me, that was the trouble. Like, when I moved down to town, I lived on a golf course for a while. I thought, man, I used to play golf 4 days a week. When I lived in Texas.
Did you get, like, a handicap?
Yeah, I did. But I never played golf in my life.
Yeah, which is hard. It's like learning piano at, like, 40.
Right.
If you don't have the kid thing, it's a lot harder.
And there was no concept of golf. We didn't have golf in Arkansas as a kid. I was poor. There were no golf courses. You know, so I started playing at like 28 or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember the first time I played around, and I had to play around to score it. And I think I shot a 109. And by the time that I was done playing, I was probably shooting 83, 84.
Yeah, that's great.
So I was a 12, 13.
That's really good.
Around in that. I felt like it was good for me.
That's really good for anyone.
But the problem with golf is you're always playing people better than you. There's always somebody who's a lot better than you.
Yeah.
And so if I can't practice, I don't want to play.
I'm with you.
And I ran out of time to practice. So, yeah, my point is I really enjoyed the new record. And so I listen, and on the back half of the record, when you put the Sade song in.
Yeah.
By your side.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Look at that. If you'd have said to me, I'm going to do By Your Side, I'd have been like, ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's like my legendary Bubble Bat song. Like, people love this song.
I love it, too.
You crushed it, though. Crushed it. Listen to this. Listen to you. Listen to you right here. Listen how good you are at this song. Listen to this. You're so much better than you know. Come on. What's your mindset going into when you're covering a song? Because you want to make it a little different, but you got to remain somewhat true.
Yeah.
You're walking a fine line.
And I definitely took an approach where I did it, like, in her structure. I think it's almost might be in the same key she sang it in. Maybe it's a half step lower. But I definitely took the tempo and the structure and kept it like she did it. And then just made the instrumentation kind of different, like 808s and something like that felt like something I was into. But yeah, I love this song. This was like, I cover a lot of songs for fun in the studio. Just as an exercise or just, I don't know, just fun to like sing other really cool songs. And this one I did as like on a whim, and then I kept like, wow, I really like this. I really like this. And I just kept finishing it until I was like, I guess I got to put this on the record.
Love this version. You know, and you also referenced Sade.
Yeah.
In Memorized. Yeah. And so on purpose, was this a thing?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
So did you?
But everybody thinks I'm saying Sade. Like Sade got low. Like I'm saying Sade, but I'm not. I'm saying Sade.
I never thought it was Sade because I don't think.
Well, you probably know who Sade is.
I do. Yeah. And so when I think this song came out before the record came out, I believe. This one of the tracks, first tracks?
Yeah.
And so when this song came out, I enjoyed it. And the record comes out and I hear the Sade song. And I'm like, oh, was that on purpose? Like, did you think to cover the song before you wrote this song?
I did. I had the cover going and I was in a write with Matt Drag and Josh Miller. Great, really big, amazing writers in town. They work a lot with Big Loud, the team I've been working with. And we were just, I don't know, we were just like coming up with ideas. And I was trying to write this really personal thing. And I was like, well, we're listening to Sade because I was listening to Sade. So I was like, that's weird. And I like listening to that. And so sometimes it's fun to, you know, all the weird lyrics are always the ones that people tend to grab onto.
Yeah, the weird lyrics are always the home runs or just the busts.
Yeah.
Whenever you do, and one of them that I would reference is whenever Sam Hunt puts out Body Like a Back Road, which is, you know, she got hips like honey. First time I heard it, I go, oh, that's a risk.
Yeah.
You know, because some of those, but those paid off, obviously, majorly.
Cadillac Seats, We Go Way Back. That's so good. That song is so well written. It's like Paul McCartney would like, be proud to write that song, in my opinion. Just like, maybe that's a bold statement, but just it's added like a crafted, like a pop concept song. It's so well executed.
Something I was talking about recently is how pop is supposedly a bad word now. Like, oh, it's pop. I'm not pop. Yeah. I'm like, well, how did that get transformed into a bad word? It literally means popular.
Yeah.
It can mean anything.
Yeah.
And if we're really defining pop, like hip hop is pop now.
Yeah.
Because well,
I use that as like big.
Yeah, okay, fair, but big meaning popular. And if someone goes, "Oh, I'm not into pop music."
Yeah.
What does that mean? You're not into music that other people like? Like, that's a pretty bold statement.
And then do you have to shift you're like, I'm a Kings of Leon guy, and then they have a hit, you're like, whoa, I can't anymore. I don't like this song.
You heard what I said a year ago. I don't like pop music, so I guess I got to switch. Yeah, that's always a weird thing when people say they don't like pop. Like, pop seems like it's a bad word to people.
Yeah. Not to me, I guess.
Yeah, me either.
I don't really run in, like, I mean, I would consider Bon Iver, like, have, I don't know, maybe that's a bad example, but pop is like, I don't know if it's such a bad word. It used to be really bad word, like when it was like the Britney Spears, like that era. But now I feel like pop is getting weird too. So it's like you hear stuff on the radio and it's like can be really weird and cool, but very, very popular and very relatable.
What's this spot here for, Mike? This endorsement here?
Blue Apron.
Oh, let me talk about Blue Apron. Blue Apron is offering listeners their first three meals for free. And when it comes to dinner, let Blue Apron take care of the planning and the shopping. While you do the cooking and the eating, you'll enjoy delicious meals like popcorn chicken with sweet chili cabbage slaw and cumin-spiced wonton noodles with vegetables and peanuts on the table in 30 minutes or less. Convenient. They deliver it right to your door. Pre-portioned ingredients, step-by-step recipes that can be cooked under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. It's flexible, 12 recipes each week. New ones, you can pick 2, 3, 4 recipes. High quality. The upcoming meals right now, because I love Blue Apron. Yeah, your boy Bobby loves Blue Apron. Pork chorizo tacos, radishes, roasted potatoes, and cotija cheese. Salmon and spicy orange salsa with quinoa and carrot salad. White cheddar cheeseburgers, balsamic glazed onion, roasted potatoes. Creamy pesto, cavatelli with mushrooms and spicy breadcrumbs. All that. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals for free. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Okay, so let me ask you this question. You're a big music guy like myself, obviously, probably bigger. Best live show you ever been to?
Best live show I've ever been to. Springsteen, I love him. I saw him at the Meadowlands right before they tore it down. You know, that's like the giant stadium. And he got out and he
played like 7 hours or something.
Yeah, he was playing Born to Run that night, which was amazing. And then he got up there and he started the show though with Pull Out Your Wrecking Ball, and it was like this. They were going to tear it down, and he was writing about this, and they had the words that they had is like whatever they, you know, what do they give old people so they can remember their lyrics?
Prompter?
Yeah, they have the teleprompter. Like they
I
all.
Mean, I have that. I mean, I don't think I'm that old. Well, I have a prompter.
I associate it more with like old rock bands.
All right.
Oh, even though I need one now because I script lyrics, but they put it on the big screens, and it was just like he's going through the lyrics and bring out your wrecking ball. And
he's
like,
reading.
No, he was just playing the song, but they had the lyrics.
Oh, they had it for everybody else. Because
no one ever. Right. It's the first time the song wasn't out. It hadn't been released. So he just was like starting the song with this show with this song. It was really beautiful.
I saw Elton John play with the prompter. And so he has so many hits.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it, man.
He's also 70.
Yeah.
I saw Steven Tyler play with a prompter.
I need one, so I'm right there with you.
You get a lot of words in some of your songs.
Yeah, it's a lot of words.
There's a lot. But you also wrote those a lot of words.
I know, but that doesn't mean, but every album you add like a lot more words. So if you haven't played something in a while, it's hard.
But some stuff that just goes away. You don't remember every song. Do you know every song?
No.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like some stuff just goes away. You replace the new knowledge.
I'll ask fans. Like there's been times where you're doing like an acoustic performance or something intimate where someone be like, play this song. I'm like, what's the first line? Help me. You know, because I don't. Usually they're like, if you get the first one, you're good. And then like the first of the second verse, you're good. Those are like the hard parts.
Yeah. So we'll do songs on a stupid band and even cover songs. As long as I can get that first even word, I just got to be put on the railroad track.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes totally. I can't even find the railroad track. You put me on the railroad track, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
I was playing a songwriter show the other night and we were playing at the Franklin Theater, which is about 400 people, and I was a guest. A big songwriter, Lee Thomas Miller, he'd written a bunch of number ones in the country, Heather Morgan. And so we're playing, and I'm watching. He puts his phone up because he's not normally a performer. He's a songwriter. He can sing, but you know, he probably writes a song a day. And he just had the first word to every line on his phone. He didn't have all the lyrics. He just had the first
Perfect.
Word. Yeah.
That's genius.
And that's all he needed. Because he wrote Brothers Osborne, It Ain't My Fault. I don't know if you remember that song. Yeah. And it's got a lot of words. He wrote it with them. And so he just had the first line of every. And I thought, that's how to do it. That's all I need.
Yeah, just get me going.
Just the first line.
I'll write. Yeah, I'll have a little line, like similar. First, just a couple lines written on the piano and a piece of tape or something if I need to remember stuff.
So Springsteen's your best live show. I was asked that.
Or Beyonce, though. When she played here, it was so good.
At Nissan Stadium?
It was so good, man.
See, I didn't still see that. Why was that good to you?
It was just like, I don't know. I'm not even a Beyonce fan. It sounded so good. It was so over the top. Like, it sounded unbelievable. And like, just this big cube. Like, just as a spectacle, it was the coolest thing I'd seen.
What was the big cube?
It was this giant cube that was like as big as an entire building. And it rotated. And then it was all LED screens too that like separated, and it was just like, and they were out in what Nissan, what's it called? The big football.
Yeah, Nissan Stadium.
Nissan Stadium. So it was like larger than life. Like it was like this building you were standing in front of. So it's like a feeling as a person. It was like, I don't know. They created this like whole world where you were standing in front of this building. I don't know. It was just really cool.
I was reading some stuff about you because my favorite artist is John Mayer, because I feel like there are only a few artists that actually speak the way you do, and you hear lyrics, you go, that's how I feel. But there are a lot of songs I like.
Yeah.
There are a lot of artists that say a lot of things I agree with, but I was a big John Mayer fan. Like, I loved Room for Squares, but when Continuum came out and Stop This Train's on there, and it's like, you know, stop the train, you know, I'm only good at being young. That's my favorite lyric ever. I have it down in my living room. I didn't realize you were on that tour, the Continuum tour with John Mayer.
Yeah, it was great.
Was it?
So great. It was like, yeah.
Because I've had probably 13 experiences with John, and recently they've all been great. But I think to be completely awesome and weird, you also got to be weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a compartmentalizing thing where you're only weird when you create art, but in real life you're normal. That's not how the world works.
Yeah.
And at times John's been really weird, but recently, the last many times, he's been awesome. So the Continuum record for me is awesome. And I wonder, I guess he was cool with you.
He was super cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like, sent me a, when we got the, when we invited us to be on the tour, I got a card that was handwritten, like, man, so excited to have you out with us. And then we came out first day, we're first sound check, which was, I saw him, he like ran to the monitor desk and was watching a sound check for the first day. And I was just like, which was not cool, actually. I freaked me out. But yeah, he was kind of in his own world. He was dating Jessica Simpson at the time. So they were spending a lot of time together. But I wouldn't say that we like hung out every day, but we had probably a dozen decent, really cool conversations. And I would see him around. We had the same lawyer for a minute. I'd run into him a couple of times. I was walking down through Manhattan one day and I hear, Matt, you know, and I look around, he's like running down the street and said hi. And so he's always been really, really kind to me. And I think there is the John persona in the interviews and stuff that is a little like, whoa, bro, you don't need to say that. But I don't know, man, I'm a fan too. I just love what he does.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, there are some artists where
I'm intimidated by how good he is.
I'm intimidated.
I'm like, I feel like I should quit music when I see what John Mayer does.
He came on my show.
I saw the interview.
So a bit of it, I was going, man, he's way too smart for me to even talk to. And I'm going, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. There was it clicked about 10 minutes in where then we just kind of
set it. He has brains doing something different.
Dude, he's working on a different level.
Yeah.
Like, he's so much smarter than I am. And I was happy that at some point in the interview, he just decided to dumb his brain down. And bond with me over that.
He was like, I think he had just started smoking weed a lot when we're on tour, and there was an after party, and he was obviously like feeling it. And he walked up to me, he's like, telling me about how he goes to Vegas. He was like, see, when I'm at Vegas, it's like I'm counting cards, and it's like perfect pitch because D is right here. Ooh. And then, like, so if a king comes, it's like, ooh, that's like a queen. And then I do all the math in my head, and he was like talking 90 miles an hour. And I was like, what is happening? Your brain is weird, bro. Like, you hear in like you're counting cards at a casino through pitch. Like, that's not normal. You're like, yeah.
And like it takes X-Men. That kind of weird person to make awesomely weird things. And for me, it's been kind of oddly awesome to be around a ton of creatives and see that to be that creative, you have to be odd. And sometimes with odd, you don't have to gel. I don't have to be friends with everybody to actually understand and appreciate their art.
I think there is a case for that. Yeah, I've heard you in an interview, but there's examples of people though that like Springsteen, I would say he's not weird at all.
You can't convince me that someone who does something so different isn't so different also in some part of his life, some dark spot. You just can't.
I mean,
it's a hard one for me.
I know. I was listening to your Chris Stapleton interview today. I was like, I was cramming for this.
Yeah.
And that was a really good one, actually.
Chris and I have, it's been a good relationship. Yes.
It was really good. Yeah. You were talking about, like, do you feel if you fix yourself, that'll screw up, like, your chances of succeeding, because the screwed up part is like, which I, it was an interesting thought, which is kind of what you're saying right now, right? Maybe.
Yeah. I'm scared. I go to therapy.
Yeah.
I try to fix myself, too, but just so much.
Just
I don't want to fix it all the way. Cause what if I lose my drive? Like, what if I'm so fixed that I don't have whatever it is that's made me so freaking nuts to get to do what I, and if I'm not tortured just a little bit, I'm not on that edge, that creative edge.
Is, but is doing like the ultimate?
What's the ultimate? What's doing?
Well, I'm just saying like I relate to that so much because do you get into personality tests or that kind of thing? Enneagram world or like, it's like, all my friends are into it.
All my friends are into it too.
It sounds like a three, what you would say. Okay. Like an achiever. Like you really want to go for things and yeah, like resume. It's like this, but I don't know. I've been in this weird world where I'm like, yeah, I just like to work and accomplish things and do things.
That's me. I love accomplishments. I don't care about accolades.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no love on trophies. No. I love accomplishing things though.
Yeah.
Because I'm not supposed to. I have a swimming pool now, which is crazy to me. I have a swimming pool.
I've seen it.
Freaking swimming pool,
yeah,
right?
It's cool.
It's crazy. Yeah. I have a swimming pool. So I go, ooh, am I not, do I need to like live in an old apartment like I used to really have that creative edge that got me to this point? Is the swimming pool going to equalize what I, and this is what goes through my mind.
You're going
to
be chilling out too much.
Last night I sat on the porch for 2 hours and just watched my computer and listened to music, and I was like, what's happening to me? This is not me.
Yeah.
Why am I not miserable? Because miserable me works so much harder.
I would say for the Bobby Bones like existence of health, like finding that balance is really, you know, I don't know. I'm in this journey too, because it's like I'm going to my fifth record and you're like, man, okay, I've been on major labels, I've had success, I've done this. And you start like putting your whole kind of identity and existence into that. And yeah, you can produce, but like at the core, like, you know, you're much more than that. I'm much more than that, what I accomplish. And ultimately, great work and that stuff won't come out of just like insecurity, fear. Like, I think like maybe some frantic work can, but I don't know. I think you're successful in spite of that, not because of that.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel like, again, I'm 38. I have accomplishments, but I don't have a lot of real life stuff. You know, I went through some beast years that were very tough. And I think that's created a lot of walls for me.
Yeah.
And I like to control what I can control
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't able to control a lot early.
Yeah.
So now... But yeah, so my question is, do you know anybody? It all leads to that. Like, hey man, can you hook me up? Yeah.
Oh, dude, I love it. This is like my own, I'm going through these same things in the fact that like Brene Brown is this author that I love. She's amazing. She has like a TED Talks, like the most watched TED Talks. And she talks a lot about perfectionism. And like, when I work on a record, when I work on something, when I put on a show, I work really hard. And perfectionism is this thing where you think you can like be free from criticism, or because it's going to be perfect. No one can poke a hole in me then because I've created this perfect thing. And she does this whole argument about how, no, that's actually not like data proves that your perfectionism gets in your way. It's actually you're successful in spite of your perfectionism. Like perfectionism, when they break it down to what it does to you in your, it actually doesn't help. And it's really an interesting thing that I've been kind of diving into.
Do you worry that
we're getting deep?
That you're going to be so balanced though, now that you have a baby, that you're not going to be able to create that.
I'm so unbalanced because I had a baby,
okay,
bro.
That's
like
fair.
I am like,
that's
yeah.
fair. Maybe you're nutty.
I had like poop stains on my shoulder. That's not balanced.
But on both shoulders, that'd be balanced. Yeah. If it's only on one, I would be OC. I'm going to play. Here's Kings and Queens, by the way. I love this song. Matt Carney. Here's,
you got me singing, we don't need no bankroll, make us feel alive. We don't need no bands, or to feel like we can ride.
richer than Solomon. With you by my side, we'll be kings and queens in our own mind. We don't need no jet plane.
Damn, dude. That's, I think it's my favorite song on the record.
Really?
Which is why, like, I would have had you come and play it by yourself, but had you, and when I saw it was you and Jillian both, and Jillian and I are cool.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's my favorite, too.
Dude, I love it, yeah. And I loved having her there.
So how'd you two get together to do the acoustic version of this song?
Well, just working, you know, I've kind of been in a transition with, like, my team and different people, and so I've been working with Big Loud in Nashville. And she was one of their artists. And I just became a fan because we're around her and you're seeing the music she's creating. And I wanted to put out an acoustic version. And I went to my manager, Seth, and I was like, yo, would Jillian be on it? And he's like, I don't know. I'll send it to her. And she was like, let's do it. So, yeah, it was really like she's such and she is crazy good in the studio.
Oh,
like
yeah.
She sings and it's not like a normal person. Like, perfect takes, perfect pitch.
Really?
Yeah, just crazy.
I'm a fan of her music, and then I took her out on tour for a couple months.
Yeah.
Whenever, cause I, like I said, I had this dumb band. We're actually fun to watch, but we're not very good. I'm the lead singer. Show you how good we are. But still, we're entertaining. We're very entertaining. So she comes out and she opens live, nails it.
Yeah.
The thing about Jillian that was crazy to me is I say, hey, come out and do a song, not for my sake, but for your sake, because you'll sell a bunch more merch if you come out during my set when people are really dialed into the show.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, and buy merch, you know, so come out. So she comes out and we can play anything. You know, we can play anything badly.
Yeah.
So I say, hey, what do you know? It's the first night. I should have went over with her before. She's like, I don't know anything. Like, you just have to sing. What do you know? She goes, I know nothing. I don't know any songs, any popular from the 70s. What do you know? Nothing. She knew no songs. It was all hipster songs. All she knew was hipster songs. Yeah. And so then finally she goes, well, I know Crazy. And I'm like, okay, Crazy. And so we.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So nobody knows it. And so my bassist, who's also a crazy good guitar player, we have to switch it. So all tour long, my bassist will play bass the whole night. Then on Jillian's song, my bassist, she would grab the guitar from my guitar player and come up and her and Jillian would play Crazy. And it was a nice moment.
Yeah.
But Jillian's like so cool. She doesn't know she's cool.
She's pretty cool, yeah. Her videos are super. Yeah, she's cool, man.
Mm. Here's Money. I like this one, too. This is on Crazy Talk. My girl is money, dollar, dollar bill. My girl is money, money, dollar, dollar bill. Ain't nothing like a na-na-na. Can't live without a na-na-na. My girl is money, money, dollar, dollar bill. Dollar, dollar bill, y'all. When you go into a record like this, it just has a different style to it. All your records have slightly different styles, and this one, you know, there's definitely some electronic flavor inside of this. Is it a decision that maybe there are songs that didn't have it that you go, we should probably add it so the record's fluid?
No, because I've always had like pretty schizophrenic records and not been afraid of that. So there's always like a weird folk moment, or like there's a song called Wanted Man on this record that's very like, I don't know, some weird like James Taylor-y song or something.
Wanted Man, right?
Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely like textures and themes and concepts you're working on, but no, I've always been like of the Beatles camp. It's like each song is kind of its own world, and as long as they're great songs and they're not like jarring, kind of, it's more of a collection of songs than it is this like concept record.
Play some Wanted Man.
You're my partner in crime. When you take my hand, you make me feel like a wanted man. You make me feel like a wanted man.
How long did it take you to make this record? What's the studio on, live on this?
It took about 3 years to write all the songs. Because I was writing while I was finishing up my other record. And then, man, I don't know. It's like comes some songs like took a day, some took 6 months, and I bet it was a year, 8 months, kind of off and on. But I was going through a lot of different things. I'd worked with a manager, Greg Latterman, who's like an amazing human, and found me and actually signed John Mayer and found him and started this record called Aware Records. And we were getting this place where I was like, I'm going into my fifth record. I needed something new. I needed like a new perspective, new life. And I wanted out of my major label deal. I was just kind of ready to do something different. And So I was going through all that. So this record was, it took a lot of time and also went really fast because there was a lot, and I had a baby. It was just like this weird, it was the weirdest creative season of my life.
You do hip hop, you consider yourself a hip hop artist?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, no.
But you said I mean. So there's part of you that does. You probably think you're better than a lot of the hip hop artists now.
No,
right?
No. I always started that way. What was funny was I had zero music upbringing. I didn't actually start doing music till college at all. But in high school, we would like, when I was being a punk kid and graffiti, we'd go, there was this legal graffiti wall in Eugene, Oregon. I got really into it because it was really creative. And all my friends were these like kind of skater punk kids, and we'd paint murals. And for fun, we would put on like an instrumental, Outkast instrumental or like Wu-Tang Clan instrumental, and like make up songs on the way back to school.
So you basically freestyle.
Yeah, we're freestyling. Right. And we just started like, I got really good at it. I was like shockingly good. And then I started like not being funny, and I was like, get really personal and tell these stories. And everybody's like, whoa. And then I started writing songs and writing like my own songs, the Outkast instrumentals. And they would kind of, my senior year, they were like, people would kind of pass them around the school. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. People like what I'm doing. So that was kind of my journey into that world, but I wasn't singing yet. So yeah, I've always had this kind of like autobiographical kind of, documentary style talking spoken word hip hop influence.
Would you say hip hop? Would you say spoken word? Slam poetry? How would you describe
it's
it?
It's funny because as soon as you say, I'm not a hip hop artist in the sense of like, I just would feel very uncomfortable using that. I would say I'm definitely influenced by it. And like Ed Sheeran would be influenced by it, or like a, you know, but to put myself in that world. I did do an interview with like a, I was like, one of the coolest invites I got to an interview was this like Canadian hip hop blog or something. They wanted to interview me for a record. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Someone accepted me in that world. But I definitely wouldn't, I don't know. I grew up on it, and it just crept its way into my music because I didn't know how to do anything else. I couldn't even sing yet. But I could kind of rap this weird melodic like storytelling.
You did win Hip Hop Song of the Year in 2006.
Yes.
For Trainwreck, the Dove Award.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of it.
Wow. I haven't listened to it. Okay.
What's that make you think about?
I don't like the song. What?
Okay. Why don't you like the song?
I don't know. I don't know.
What do you think?
It's not bad. I don't hate it.
No, but what do you think when it comes on?
Like it was another era of me creatively. It's probably like the seventh song I'd ever written in my life.
And you won a Dove Award for it. I won't make you keep listening.
No, it's interesting. Well, actually, turn it back up. Let me hear it. I probably haven't listened to this in 8 years. Yeah, that's definitely more rap than.
I have a theory.
Yeah, yeah.
You can tell me if you believe this. And I have a book coming out in a couple weeks, and I wrote about this. That if you continue creating,
yeah,
doesn't matter what you're creating, but if you continue creating and you're not somewhat embarrassed by what you've created in the past, you're not moving forward. You're not distancing yourself from it. You can be proud of it and still be embarrassed by it. There are old things that I've done that I'm a bit embarrassed by, but I'm proud of them because they got me to the next spot. Yeah. They got me to the next spot. Yeah. So my theory is, if you listen to something a few years ago and you're not embarrassed by it, it means you're probably still in the same spot. Like if you're not embarrassed that you haven't grown. So you hear that, do you think, wow, I just grown so much as an artist? Or are you like, man, what was I thinking? Come on.
Maybe like that's definitely like the more hip hop leaning. That was me coming out of that world. So I was probably more like directly influenced in trying to occupy that space of like the hip hop thing, which I don't know if that fit me to the core. You know, you're trying things, and sometimes you try. You know, sometimes you're like, you look back at a picture, you're like, why did I wear those jeans? Like, come on, bro.
That's because
like,
you've grown.
For those 4 months, I thought those jeans were so cool. Why? But I was way off. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you're right. You've grown. You have grown.
I've grown taller a bit later in life too.
Really?
Oddly. Yeah, really? Oddly. I don't know why. I just keep growing and always.
Yoga or something? You getting better posture?
You do yoga? Because I do a little yoga.
I love it. I don't do anything.
So you don't stop doing anything because you don't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So you maintain.
Just don't do anything, and you're very disciplined.
That's a thing too.
I'm disciplined.
Doing anything for a long period of time is tough. Even not doing something is doing something.
Yeah, right.
Like respect. Like I like that.
That's my thing.
Let me talk about sleep number for a second. Maybe you've heard me talk about my amazing Sleep Number 360 smart bed. They're so smart, they respond to your every movement, and they automatically adjust to you. The great news is their latest smart beds are even more comfortably priced during their semi-annual sale going on right now. So many couples disagree on mattress firmness. I can't wait to be a couple that disagrees on mattress firmness. Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be nice.
Just to have a couple.
I know.
Ah, Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's right for both of you. You can actually feel how it contours to your neck, shoulder, back, hips, and it relieves pressure points. There's even an adjustment for snoring. How about that? My Sleep Number setting is 30. My Sleep IQ score last night, I didn't look. I'm just trying to be honest, but I will say that it's usually in the low 90s. I do move a bit. Right now, if you're listening, the semi-annual sale to see the latest Sleep Number 360 smart beds with special Memorial Day savings up to $700 right now. There are more than 550 Sleep Number stores. Visit sleepnumber.com/bones to find the store nearest to you. All right, so Crazy Talk, you put on 12 songs. 11 of yours and cover?
Yeah, maybe.
Accurate. How do you feel about albums now? Because, I mean, you put out a record. We're in a world now where the debate is,
yeah,
you know, is an album worth it? Because you can put out, just the math, you can put out 10 songs and they'll stream at 1 million each. But you can put out one song, and if it streams 10 million, you actually make more than if you did
that.
So, and it's also all the flashing lights and remaining in the marketplace, because you put out a full record, you've kind of shot your shot for a minute.
Yeah.
So I just wonder your thoughts on the album in today's consumer environment.
Well, that was really why the approach on this record was, we actually put out, I think it was five songs before the album came out, and then released the final, I think the sixth song would have been on the day that it dropped, so that doesn't really count, but then released seven at the end. And I still think the album obviously is super valid as a artist and as like someone who I think my fans want that. I think they want a body of work to listen to, you know, put on. They're on the boat driving around, or they're driving home from work. I think they want a body of work to immerse themselves in from you. The core fans, but there's definitely people who, you know, it's definitely moving in a way. It's almost like the 50s. It's very single driven. And I don't think it's all bad. I think it's, I was reading a Bono interview, and there, it was this kind of laziness that, if you were a big band, or you could just like, you needed one song that really was great, and then you could kind of put out your album, and they could be concept songs. And some of that's sad that we've lost that, but some of it's also good, because it's really made songwriting has to be better. You can't just put like, you just can't throw something on an album and call it done. You have to like, literally each song has to be a very noteworthy experience in itself for people to care about it. And because I think that's not bad.
It's an investment in time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, back in our day, because we're relatively the same age, that you would go buy a CD. I remember going to buy the Right Said Fred CD because I wanted I'm Too Sexy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get I'm Too Sexy without buying the whole album.
Yeah.
And it was I'm Too Sexy around track 3, 7 or 8 pieces of garbage, maybe one other song that was okay, but they got you, because to get that one song, you had to go to Walmart and buy the CD.
Yeah.
Now, you have the option to check or plus mark or what, and get rid of these songs immediately. And even if you like something, there's 17 new albums coming out on Fresh Music Friday or whatever it is.
It's crazy how much music comes out right now.
So it's harder to matter.
Yeah, it is harder to matter.
It's harder to stay in the marketplace.
I mean, it's harder to cut through. It's hard. Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. And I've been in the business long enough where I've seen it kind of, I was probably the tail end of the last garb of like, you know, my Columbia, when I put out my first record on Columbia, I think we spent like, just the money was different. Everything was different. It was very, we spent like almost $300,000 on the first music video. I didn't know. I had nothing to do with that. That's just what the label did. They're like, no, this is what we're going to shoot film for 3 days. And it's a really beautiful video. But I just, that whole model of kind of building this huge promotional piece around one song to drive an album sales, has died. It's not it's no longer a thing. It won't ever be a thing, probably.
Right. And the great thing about that, though, is, as we talk about the negatives, is that every song really has to be elite at this point. You know, you can't put out garbage because it just won't exist at all.
It will just be, filler. Like, there's no filler, really. I think it's encouraging in the sense of, like, that's kind of how I create too. I don't create like these kind of concept albums. Songs are very, they're their own children. And then you get an album together and there's similar textures and you're working with like different layers, but each song really is its own thing. And if it's not like special, it doesn't make the record regardless of what the sonics or if it fits better. I don't know. I've never really been that way. It's very like the songs raise their hands themselves. So it fits me because I like putting out songs that I believe in.
It's tough for the consumer to digest 12 songs. It just really is.
Yeah.
Especially when let's compare it to something else. Netflix.
Yeah.
When there are 100 shows offered to us and the first moment in the show that we're watching, we feel like that is not for me. We just jump to the next one.
Yeah, right.
And so in a 12, 14 song, 11 song record, let's say you hit track 4 and you go, I don't know. Not next. You go to the next thing. And so, time is so valuable now. And these records. I was listening to Bob Lefsetz. Do you know who he is by any chance?
Oh, yeah.
He was talking about how there will only be concept albums in the future. Otherwise, it's just put out good songs. 1, 2, 3. Stay in the marketplace. Only concept albums.
Makes sense.
It does make sense. Now, I don't know about the concept album. I start to think about radio in the world of, what I do. Well, here's the future of radio to me. And I don't do radio for terrestrial. It's part of it. I mean, we have, 6 million people a week that listen on terrestrial and another 3 or 4 that listen digitally. But it's shifting. It's slowly shifting. People will come and they listen to my show, not because of the music. The music accompanies the show we talk a lot. But they listen to hear opinions, thoughts.
Yeah.
They hear to laugh, hear to cry. It's... the only place that they can find, a Howard Stern or a Charlemagne the God or me is on our channel. And so what radio is going to turn into is back to the 50s, how music is, and you're going to listen for your DJs to tell you what songs they like instead of these universal programmed playlists. It's going to alter all the charts, and you're going to have a few guys. Otherwise, why would you listen to something in 5 years, 3 years? It just tells you what to hear when everything is available for you.
Yeah.
There's a playlist for everything.
There is a playlist for everything.
What mood are you in right now? You got a fart? Got a playlist. Feeling good? Yeah.
Right. So, toothbrushing playlist?
Yeah.
For that moment, you can do it.
Yes. You got poop on your shirt?
Yeah.
You got one?
Yeah, the poop on the shirt playlist. That's a good one, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. there's a lot of Beck.
You work at the Starbucks by the Ryman?
That a thing? It was a thing.
They told me that before you came on the radio show. I never brought it up. I think I got lost in your eyes or something, but what was that story?
I used to work at the Starbucks on 5th and Church and walk by the Ryman all the time. And there was, would have been so far-fetched to actually think I'd play there. And we played there the second time on this last tour, and which was about a little more special because it was moving slower. I could the first time we played though, I was telling the story. It's funny. I was like, we're doing this special thing. We should probably have you need content for everything, right? So I'm like, get a video guy down here. Let's film this. We'll put a little piece together for the fans. Let them know. But I was it was the end of the tour. I was very much, by that time you kind of, things are working for you. Like it's like a well-oiled machine. You kind of know when you're on autopilot a little bit, with the show and we're doing the interview and I'm like, okay, now we need to get some content. Let's do an interview. They're like, okay. So they're filming me and they're like, tell them about the story. I'm like, yeah, I used to work at Starbucks and I never thought I'd play here. And out of nowhere, I'm like, can't talk. I'm like bawling in this interview. And this guy, I don't even know him. He's just like a dude with a camera that I just like, we found someone knew him. And he's looking at me like, I'm like, I can't. It was just really meaningful to be in this place and in Nashville with so many legends that have played there. And, I feel a little bit like I'm fooling everybody, but to be there is just, it was really special. And the second time was even more special just because I actually felt like I slowed down on purpose.
Do you have imposter syndrome?
Oh yeah.
I have it heavily. When you said that, I was like, oh, I get that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you hear you, right? Like you're actually good.
Well, I mean, you always hear yourself, but I know how I got there, I think when you write a song, you're like, oh, there are definitely moments that you, the great songs are freaky. They're spooky. They just show up. They're just like given to you. It's really odd. I wish I understood it more, but like great songs just appear. And those moments are definitely like, whoa, this is cool. Like whatever is happening, however I've been made and wired, that this can happen in my life is really special. And I am in awe of those moments, but they still don't feel like me. They feel like outside of me. And then the rest of it, you see all the hard work and labor and that goes into something. You're like, oh, I get how I kind of pulled this one off. Like, I get it. Like, I did this, and then I put this chord in there, and then I said this. And I don't know. I still feel like I'm fooling everybody.
Yeah, I do too. I really, really do. I feel, and I've said this before, that like I'm on a string of 7-Eleven robberies, and eventually they're going to catch me. Yeah. It's just a matter of time, because you don't rob 7-Elevens forever. Eventually they catch up with you and go, okay, you're done. Time to go to jail. You've been robbing 7-Elevens. And that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Because I don't really have a talent.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can sing, and I'm not fishing.
You have a talent. I was just listening to you. Yeah, but okay. But carry on. I think you're very talented.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
you, Matt Carney.
In your own way.
In my own way. That's the problem.
No, it's a unique talent. It's very unique. It's why it's super unique. Actually, it's really cool. But yeah. But can you rip a John Mayer solo? No.
I would love to.
I know. God, me too.
Come on.
Right?
I want to do everything. I'm a mediocre comedian. I don't even speak right. I'm a radio host. I can't even speak. Like my mouth doesn't even work right. I don't talk well. My grammar's not good. I got to be in typing. I do nothing particularly well. I just work, and I feel like eventually, you know, there are much more talented people. But I heard you say that. I'm like, oh, wow. Matt Carney has imposter syndrome. We're the same. We should be best friends.
We'll be like, this. I don't belong here. We'll, together, we'll do that to each other. Like, he asked me out to coffee. He doesn't want to be here.
I haven't been on dates in a long time. But I would feel every relationship early on. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why are they really dating me? They probably really don't want to date me. They probably just like, I'm talking to them on the radio. If I was an accountant, would they date me? No. I go through that. Did you go through that?
That's how I met my wife. Partly maybe my like insecurity of like, I will win you. But also she just didn't care. Like, I remember I met her at Anthropology in town. She was shopping. I was shopping. We had friends in common, and I walked up to her and I was like, there was a group of friends and I thought she was cute. And I was like, hey, have we met before? And she goes, no, like that. I was like, oh, okay. Sorry. I was like, we've met before. She goes, no, like that. And she doesn't even remember that. This just sums it up. She doesn't even remember that interaction, right? I remember it deeply. She was wearing purple boots. I put it in a song. This whole "Hey Mama" was the song. It's about this whole interaction, and she doesn't remember it at all. She said she had a margarita at lunch. That's why she doesn't remember it. But I think she just doesn't remember it. But yeah, like I met her. I saw her at Fido coffee shop. Went up to her, got her like, I think it was MySpace era. We had a friend in common. I saw her, so I commented on her page or something. And then we went on a date, and then a month had gone by, and this is after Nothing Left to Lose has happened. So I was like, I had like a gold record. It was like big deal. And about a month into dating, she's like, hey, I heard one of your songs. I was like, oh yeah. She's like, yeah, it's pretty good. Change the subject. I was like, you just don't care at all. I was like, you can help me. You know, it was like, it was definitely like, if I went to her tomorrow, I was like, I'm going to be a janitor. She'd be like, okay. Which is what I love about her, and also what is incredibly challenging also, because sometimes you just want a fan. Be like, honey, you're the best artist ever. You are the best writer I've ever heard. The way you use that lyric, no, that's never going to happen in our relationship.
How do you impress her then? What was it?
How do I impress her?
How did and how do?
How do I impress my wife?
Yeah.
I turn off my phone, and I say, do you want to go for a walk? It's like the lamest stuff. It's not lame, I'm joking, but very much goes against like what drives me every day.
So this, how did you impress
quality time is her thing.
Yeah,
I don't like quality time. I'll tell you what I like. I'm words. I can give you words. I can, like, you know, help you.
Love languages here.
We're talking
about
different
love languages. Yeah,
we share in physical touch, so we can kind of like snuggle on the couch watching Netflix. That works. So that's kind of a go-to for us. But what was your question? What did you ask me?
And what did? What was it that got her, though? Because it didn't sound like it was, hey, he's a musician.
I think the music was not it. If anything, the music was like, she had to deal. Like, it was a liability with, like, kind of the lifestyle. I think it was, we just really clicked and fell in love and thought she was really sweet and kind and, she cared about people a lot and she thought I was funny and I don't know.
Interesting.
And really ravishingly handsome.
Yeah, so I was going to say, how does she not think that?
I mean, she was very attracted to me. That's
all I say about you. When you meet him in person, you will be blown away how good looking he is. Wow. You bring up nothing. Let's play this one. This is. I felt, being a fan of your music, a bit odd asking you to play this song just because I go, I'm a fan. He probably doesn't want to play this song anymore.
Love this song. Love this
still,
song. Love this song.
So many artists.
Favorite song.
Really?
Yep.
Really? I like to hear that because I'm a fan. And I always don't like. Because I like to have a moment and you're like, oh, finally, they're playing the song that I love so much.
Yeah. No.
And your set list when you make and you.
I just had. If you notice, on the end of the chorus, there's like a missing measure. I just had lunch with the drummer who played on it yesterday, Lindsey Jameson, and it actually has a drop measure. If you try to clap, no one's gonna care about this.
No, actually. I know they will actually.
There, you know, you got 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Usually, there's like the chord changes. It goes 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. It skips a whole measure. Which has this weird one more time to find you, like the whole thing. And it was really odd. And I was in the studio and I was like, the drummer's like, wait, what are you doing? You can't do that. I was like, oh, should we add another measure? And he's like, no, that's genius. That is amazing. I was like, really? Okay. Let's keep it in there. But yeah, that song just kind of fell out of the sky. It was
do you
like,
hear that every time though?
What?
The extra measure.
So you got two.
But
three,
do you hear it every time?
Four,
do you think about it every
one,
time?
Two, no, three, four, one, two, three, one, two, three, four. So there was. There's like a. Does anyone care about this?
Yeah, no, I do. I'm actually listening to you. Because
three,
I wonder.
One.
This is something
two,
that nobody else is going to notice. But I wonder if you notice it every time you hear the song.
I don't. I just wrote it that way. Usually you should play a chord like. The normal structure of pop music in general would be, you know, you play one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four. That's what naturally everyone feels normal to people. But the way I wrote the melody, one more time to find, and we changed chord on find you, had this total, like, actually really nice release to skip that measure. So I just did it naturally writing. I didn't even know. I was playing my guitar by myself. I didn't even know what I was doing. I just did it because it felt like the chord needed to change there. And, yeah, I was like a. I don't think about it, but it is. When we played Conan with a song a long time ago, Max Weinberg.
Yeah, drummer for Springsteen.
Yeah, Springsteen. Yeah. He's like. What they didn't tell you in the old studio was he was like 10 feet. The band is 10 feet from you.
They shoot those cross angles, so you think it's much bigger than
dude,
it is.
Dude, it was.
Yeah.
They were like hovering over us. Like it was, and they play like, you know, their like bumper music is like. You're just like, ah, like it's so good and so intense. And then they're like, and Matt Carney, and they point to you. And Max stands up, puts his drums under his arm, and stares at me over his shoulder, arms crossed, like 10 feet from me, like right off camera. But you're just like, whoa, Max is intimidating me, and he's trying to, right? And we get to the chorus one more time. And every drummer freaks out over that I do that. And we get to the drop measure. And he's like, knees buckle, and he's like, okay. And then he starts like vibing to it. And then he waits for the next one, and we get to the second chorus, and he's like, throws his hands up. He's like, yes, that part right there. And then we kept getting to it. Like, it was winning Max over as the show was going. And I was like, this is the greatest moment of my life right
That's
there.
Funny.
Yeah.
I was watching a video of Harry Connick Jr., and he was playing, and the crowd was clapping on the wrong, you know,
yeah.
They're clapping. They were probably clapping on 1 and 3 instead of 2 and 4.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watched him. Take his band and shift the song.
No.
No, it's an amazing YouTube video. And if you're a music nerd, you're fascinated that you can't do it, but
wow.
You understand. And
yes.
He takes it and he
shifts it so that they play on the two and four.
So they're playing on the two and four.
And they don't even know.
They have no idea.
They're just like, ooh, we got swag here all of a sudden.
Yeah. look, if you think about it, if you leave this room and you ever think about this experience again, look up that video. It's amazing. Wow. He's just crushing it.
Well, that's the funny thing is that's the problem with Nothing Left to Lose, because I couldn't sit in and play it with anybody. I remember, I feel like I'm name dropping, but Kenny did the thing with the Wailers, right? And we had become kind of like acquaintances around that record. He was way into that record, and he randomly texted someone or me and was like, "Hey, we're at down at Tootsie's. You should come hang out. We're doing this."
You and Chesney.
Yes.
Are at Tootsie's.
It was like he had invited some people down.
I like name dropping, by the way. So
yeah, okay. I'll do it gladly. Right. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I was like, lead with my resume. That's what I do. he said, come on down and we're just hanging out. He was doing the thing with the Wailers. That was a while ago, right? So he was like Bob Marley's Wailers. Mm-hmm. He was doing like his reggae thing, and they were the house band, and he was playing songs, and he's like, hey, my best friend that I don't even really, that we, my best friend that I've only talked to on the phone, come on up here. Cause we've been talking on the phone for a while. And he's like, well, let's play that one song, Nothing Left to Lose. I'm like, well, there's a drop. Like, you can't in front of a crowd be like, well, there's a drop measure. So we're going to establish the tempo. But then when we do it, you like, and I'm like going in the song, like there's no, and the band doesn't know the song. Dude, they're from Jamaica. They're like stoned. Like they don't listen to Matt Carney music. And we get to the chorus and I'm like, there's no way this is going to work, but I'm going. And every time we'd get to that and they would like, it would like, finally we'd get some momentum going as the band and we'd hit that part and it would just be like, someone came through with like a baseball bat and just like took out all the instruments. It was just like chaos. And then we'd kind of gather our strength again and like everybody, okay, we got this figured out. And I get to the drop measure in the next chorus and it was like, everyone would slowly play quieter and be like, yeah, it doesn't work.
That's like musical nerd porn is what you just did right there.
Yeah.
That's for people that love it, that they love that. We've been talking for an hour. Appreciate the time, man.
Man, my pleasure, man. I'm a big fan.
I think the record's fantastic. You know, and anytime you put out new music, I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be about. And I think hopefully, because I think I was probably adding you on Instagram early and going, hey, check it out. So I'm not lying.
No, man.
Sometimes I lie. Who cares, right? I'll be like, yeah, it's pretty good. Not usually, but sometimes. Everybody check out the record. I've enjoyed the time. And if I told you, I saw you in the airport once and wouldn't talk to you because I was like, oh, it's Matt Carney. Next time, I'm for sure going to take a picture of you and then send it to you and be like, dude, I saw you at the airport. Probably still won't come up to you. But you're flying Southwest, dude, rocking the Southwest Airlines.
That's how I do it, bro. That's how I do it.
All right, good to see you, bud.
Thanks, man.
Matt Carney. And but by the way, again, don't forget to check out Christian Bush's podcast called Geeking Out. Also, you can go back many episodes and listen to Red Akins or John Oates from Hall & Oates or Chris Stapleton. And again, stream, download Matt's record. Check it out. Maybe you'd be a new fan. All right, thank you very much. See you next time, everybody.